Welcome to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. I'm Susie Colick, the founder of Pretty Deadly Self-Defense, a self-defense program for women I developed based on my experiences as a violent crime survivor and my 24 years of training in the Japanese art of ninjutsu. I'm going to dive right in, and in this episode, talk about the realities that women face about our safety and why it's important to address them in self-defense. But before I go on, did you know that we certify self-defense trainers all over the world? If you're a martial artist, a fitness professional, or a community leader, or even if you're looking for a meaningful side hustle that delivers positive social impact, our self-defense trainer certification courses give you the tools to deliver effective self-defense that help your clients transform not only into confident humans, but into loyal fans. We have certification courses coming up in Oakland, California, Paris, France, and Manchester, England. Check out prettydeadlypro.com to find out more. Okay, back to our episode. The importance of talking about the realities that women face in self-defense. This came up to me recently because I was watching a video on TikTok, a story narrated by a woman. It's her lived experience. And I just want to say she's very generous to share this story with the rest of the world because it is brutal. So trigger warning before I go on. This woman talks about her life as a prostitute. She was working for a pimp, working in truck stops, had been sent to something that's called a bunny farm, which is basically where a lot of women and a lot of underage women are sort of kept in an underground brothel and bought and used by various men, and then was sent back to the truck stop. In her story, she talks about when she returns from the bunny farm, she's at the truck stop and a customer that she had had before said that he really wanted to book her because he had missed her while she was away and offered her a lot of money for it. So she agreed, of course. I mean, that's what she's doing for work. And the guy kind of set her up in the back of the truck and then said, hold on, I'll be right back. And then comes back with five friends. They brutally violate her. They abuse her body to such a degree that she loses consciousness. And when they're done, they drag her outside naked and tie her to a tree and leave her there. And then they drive off. She was found by a woman who was driving by and happened to see her and saved her. And that's the end of the clip that I heard. I actually didn't listen to the rest of it, but I imagine she went into therapy and got the support that she needed. And she's now no longer doing this, but is working as an advocate for women who are stuck in this cycle. Before I go on, I want to say I know that some women do sex work voluntarily, and it's something that they choose to do, and that is totally okay and supported. However, there are, as we know, there are a lot of women who are not in that field voluntarily, and this woman who is narrating the story was one of them. What struck me when I was listening to this story, and apart from just the sheer brutality and bestiality of it, was the difference between her lived experience and the things that women learn in self-defense classes. Now, granted, a lot of women don't have that very brutal experience in life and never will, thank goodness. But a lot of women do. And all women understand that this is something that we are always subject to. It's an ugly story. And I would imagine that if I was a man listening to this story, I would very much like to distance myself from men who behave in this way. I would not want to be associated. And I think that's where we come up with the phrase, like, not all men are like this. That may be true, but men who behave in this way, unfortunately, are the ones who are representing men to the rest of humanity, and specifically to women and girls and marginalized people. It is the worst of humanity that men are often being judged by rather than the best. And I think that that is something that's really important to consider. We want to judge the best of all of us, of each of us. But at the same time, these actions can be so pervasive that they end up being the definition of malehood in many ways. I'm getting off of topic a little bit.
because what I really want to talk about is how this relates to self-defense classes. And I say this because I recently took a self-defense class that was given by a guy at a studio where I'm also teaching some classes, just out of curiosity, because I wanted to know what his style was. And I think I talked about that in a couple of episodes ago. But I also see a lot of self-defense videos on social media platforms of men saying, okay, if this ever happens to you, this is what you should do. And so often when I'm looking at these videos, the setup for the attack is not realistic to what women experience. And I'm speaking most specifically about defense against rape. For some reason, a lot of men who come up with these ideas think that the way a rape is committed is really specific. It always strikes me as like going to the gynecologist. And maybe we can look at that as a positive thing, that the men who are coming up with these scenarios actually don't know what a rape looks like, which is good for them. That means that they're not rapists. On the other hand, I sometimes suspect that they're also imagining scenarios that they feel more comfortable teaching rather than scenarios that are realistic for us and that we actually need to defend against. My feeling is that a lot of people in general, not just men, but a lot of people in general don't want to look at these very, very ugly realities of the ways that women and marginalized people are attacked and harmed, because who wants that stuff in their heads? However, teaching people imagine scenarios instead, because that's more comfortable for you as a trainer, and you think maybe even more comfortable for your clients, is helping absolutely nobody. I don't think that you have to like sit down and force yourself to watch a bunch of snuff films or horror films or whatever it is. But I do think that you need to actually do your homework and understand what these situations really look like for people, what the actions really are. One of the things that comes up for me a lot is the MO of the way that attackers approach women, the modus operandi. And I don't hear it spoken about a lot. So especially if I'm reading newspaper articles about a current spate of attacks or rapes or whatever it is, what I never see in those articles, and maybe the police are looking at it and maybe they aren't, I don't know, it's usually not included in the articles. But what I'm never seeing is the fact that these people always approach women in the exact same way. And again, I talked about this a few episodes ago when our trainer Natalie had been assaulted on the street while on holiday in Spain, where men will often approach women and ask for directions, ask for the time, ask for some kind of favor, understanding that women are more likely to stop and help because we're very socialized to do that. And that's really what they're trying to do, is just to get us to stop long enough so they can grab us. They're also banking on the fact that women have a hard time saying no to people when they're asking for help, but also that much more underlying aspect of the way that we're all socialized, you know, under patriarchy that says, you know, men usually don't ask for directions. So if a man comes up and asks for help in any way, time, directions, whatever, on a very subconscious level, a woman may possibly think, oh, this guy must be okay because he's not giving in to that patriarchal macho nonsense of not asking for help. I honestly think that if you sat down with someone who is a serial attacker and asked them these questions, they might not be able to articulate it. But I do think that this is what they're doing on a subconscious level. They are playing on the way that we are socialized. That's one layer. But to look at, you know, what's really happening to a woman when she's being raped? Like, what is the actual position of the rapist? Are they on their feet? Are they on the ground? It's unlikely that some guy would actually be on his knees in a sort of gynecological position in between a woman's legs. Without getting too graphic about it, it's just unlikely. The woman whose story I heard on TikTok, of course, as I've already said, is an extremely brutal, brutal story. But these are the things that we actually face. And if you want to teach self-defense, it doesn't mean you have to expose yourself to the world of violence, but it would be doing your clients and the world in general a much bigger favor and be far more noble to teach women and marginalized people things that are based on our realities and not on what's comfortable for you to teach. Before I sign off on this episode, I do want to say, please don't listen to that BS about not wearing a ponytail. Years ago, when I lived in Los Angeles, there was this long email that was getting sent around saying, oh, police interviewed a bunch of rapists, and these are all the things they look for in a potential victim, and all the things that you have to pay attention to keep yourself safe. One of which was, you know, don't, you know, if a woman is wearing a ponytail, she's more of a target. Being safe on the way to your car, you know, XYZ. There's a really a long list of these things. And my first question back then and my question now is always, why do you believe that criminals would be telling the truth to cops? Like, why? Why are you believing criminals speaking honestly and openly to police officers in prison? None of that makes any sense. Why do you think criminals would actually want to be helping victims stay safe from their ways of attack? I mean, none of it makes sense. So please don't listen to that nonsense, and please don't perpetuate it, because it's very frustrating. It doesn't matter what a woman's hair do is or whether it's long or short. That has nothing to do whether she is going to be an ideal target or not ideal target. It only has to do with the person who's making the decision to attack. Regardless of that, I do think it's important to look at reports rather than listen to like criminals tell you things that you can't trust anyway, but look at reports, witness reports, not the criminal version of the story. The fact that women have a hard time saying no to people when they're asking for help, but also that much more underlying aspect of the way that we're all socialized, you know, under patriarchy that says, you know, men usually don't ask for directions. So if a man comes up and asks for help in any way, time, directions, whatever, on a very subconscious level, a woman may possibly think, oh, this guy must be okay because he's not giving in to that patriarchal macho nonsense of not asking for help. I honestly think that if you sat down with someone who is a serial attacker and asked them these questions, they might not be able to articulate it. But I do think that this is what they're doing on a subconscious level. They are playing on the way that we are socialized. That's one layer. But to look at, you know, what's really happening to a woman when she's being raped, like what is the actual position of the rapist? Are they on their feet? Are they on the ground? It's unlikely that some guy would actually be on his knees in a sort of gynecological position in between a woman's legs. It without getting too graphic about it, it's just unlikely. The woman whose story I heard on TikTok, of course, as I've already said, is an extremely brutal, brutal story. But these are the things that we actually face. And if you want to teach self-defense, it doesn't mean you have to expose yourself to the world of violence, but it would be doing your clients and the world in general a much bigger favor and be far more noble to teach your clients, to teach women and marginalized people things that are based on our realities and not on what's comfortable for you to teach. And before I sign off on this episode, I do want to say, please don't listen to that BS about not wearing a ponytail. Years ago, when I lived in Los Angeles, there was this long email that was getting sent around saying, oh, police interviewed a bunch of rapists, and these are all the things they look for in a potential victim, and all the things that you have to pay attention to keep yourself safe. One of which was, you know, don't, you know, if a woman is wearing a ponytail, she's more of a target. Being safe on the way to your car, you know, XYZ. There's really a long list of these things. And my first question back then and my question now is always, why do you believe that criminals would be telling the truth to cops? Like, why? Why are you believing criminals speaking honestly and openly to police officers in prison. None of that makes any sense. Why do you think criminals would actually want to be helping victims stay safe from their ways of attack? I mean, none of it makes sense. So please don't listen to that nonsense, and please don't perpetuate it, because it's very frustrating. It doesn't matter what a woman's hair do is, or whether it's long or short. That has nothing to do whether she is going to be an ideal target or not ideal target. It only has to do with the person who's making the decision to attack. Regardless of that, I do think it's important to look at reports rather than listen to like criminals tell you things that you can't trust anyway, but look at reports, witness reports, not the criminal version of the story. You have been listening to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. You can learn more about who we are and what we do and how to find a Pretty Deadly course near you by visiting our website at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com. And if you're a fitness or martial arts pro and you'd like to enhance your instructor skills, our certification programs are open for enrollment. You can find them at our website at prettydeadlypro.com. This podcast is produced by Singe Network for Pretty Deadly, recorded in Berlin, and our original music is the track Icarus Wish by Berlin band Dead Centuries, used with permission of the artists.